With that, I want to introduce John Hewlett. John is a farm and ranch management specialist at the University of Wyoming and member of the regional Right Risk and Right Navigator teams. He also coordinated past efforts of the regional WIRE program. He grew up in Washington State, where he worked 8 years, four as a foreman, on a large stocker cattle crop operation. John holds a BS degree in agricultural business from Montana State and a master's and degree in agriculture economics from Oregon State University. He came to the University of Wyoming Department of Agriculture and Applied Economics in 1987. Since then, he has been involved in a number of state and regional extension programs, receiving 2 national awards for professional excellence, 4 regional awards, 3 UW Extension Awards, and 6 other regional or national awards. John's current extension interests include risk management, integrated management enterprise assessment, financial analysis, record keeping, and applications of technology in agriculture. He and his family operate a small farm and ranch 20 miles outside of Laramie, Wyoming, where they have several commercial small animal enterprises. John?
All right. Thanks, Chris, for that great introduction, and thank you all for the opportunity to offer a few thoughts about risk management and some of the alternatives that you might consider for managing in the face of drought risk. First thing I guess I'd like to offer is that when we think about humans and how we respond to risk, we typically think of loss. Scientists and others that are researching how the brain and how we as human beings process risk information are finding that we tend to focus on what we give up when we look at alternatives that we're not really sure about how things are going to turn out. We should keep in mind, though, that good things are often also possible. Dallas talked about the possibility of a great rainstorm coming through, and we sometimes are very close to the edge as to whether something might go good or bad. But the point is that the risk enters into the situation because we are uncertain. We don't really know for sure what's going to come about, and that can inject sources of worry, doubt, fear that we maybe make the wrong decision. But basically, the uncertainty and not knowing about what the future events may and how they may unfold and what they may mean for us is where the risk enters in. And we tend to try to avoid those kind of things. We don't like it when it's uncertain, and in part that injects some fears of as it's listed on the slide, fear of being wrong, having made a poor decision, being known as a failure in the local community. This whole concept of shame and actually being on the wrong side of the decision certainly interjects an emotional element to it, and Dallas mentioned that as well. And in fact, it would be best, as he describes, developing a drought plan if we could make some of those kind of decisions before that emotion enters in, if it's possible for us to do that. Well, another aspect of that is that different people don't necessarily view risk in the same way. We may view it differently because of where we are in life, based upon past experiences, based upon our age, or even gender differences can help explain exactly how it is that we see risk, and it may be different than others, and it may change over our lifetimes. So folks that are studying risk and analyzing how folks make decisions under risk tend to group these types of perspectives into 3 different general groupings. There are those of us who are risk averse or tend to avoid risk when we can do that. There are others who see risk as an opportunity, and the fact that there is opportunity typically when risk exists to make money or to possibly get ahead in one way or another tends to lead a certain group of folks, at least, to be what we call risk-loving and actually to pursue risky opportunities. There are other folks that are more in the middle that don't tend to maybe think about the risks so much but think more about the dollars of return and how they think that might shake out for them. Now, one thing to keep in mind, though, is that when we have low risk, we usually also have low return. And so zero risk may not actually be the goal that we're shooting for. In terms of programs, what we talk about is choosing or trying to manage risk to a level that we're comfortable bearing. Because not all of us see risk in the same way, some of us are more comfortable carrying a little more risk, where others would prefer to reduce risk where it's possible to do so. And since we don't see risk In the same way, it's not surprising that there are lots of different strategies for managing risk. Dallas talked about a number of them that we might could consider. If we think about them in kind of general categories, the list on the screen of five different categories might be a way of kind of characterizing them, all the way from, as I described, risk-averse folks who would, in number one, try to avoid those risks, whereas in other cases, number five down at the other end of the spectrum, perhaps we just need to accept certain risks. Weather risk is one of those things we tend to face a lot of in agriculture, and there really isn't a lot that we can do about that. In between, though, there are a number of strategies and alternative means available to us to actually manage those different kinds of risk that we face, as well as strategies for that have more or less effect depending on what risk that we're concerned about managing. I'm going to talk a little bit about probably the third category in terms of methods for transferring risk and or using insurance is a primary focus of my comments today. But one of the things to keep in mind is that even if we pursue and analyze some of these different strategies, not all of them are going to have the same effect on our risk. So if we think about risk as being variability in our net income over an annual production period, these graphs on the screen represent different ways of maybe affecting that risk. If we think about starting with the solid line versus adopting some kind of risk management strategy and moving more towards a dotted line kind of configuration, clearly there are a number of different possibilities that we could imagine in terms of how those risk management strategies might affect our net return over time. And it's up to us as managers as to select which strategy we think is best and which one gets us to a place where we feel a little more comfortable perhaps with that level of risk. When we talk about risk, we're really thinking about five different categories of risk, typically when we consider agricultural operations. The first two we're pretty familiar with, and Dallas has already mentioned quite a bit about in terms of marketing risk and the prices that we receive for our calves or for our cold cows, but it also has to do with the prices that we pay for input items, whether it be increasing costs of hay or other kinds of inputs. Clearly that affects our bottom line as well. Production risk has more to do with the yield that we receive after either growing a crop or selling our calves, or the quality of that product when we take it to market. Category three here, institutional risk or legal risk, we're thinking about regulations and or other kinds of things that we need to comply with in a legal sort of way that govern in part how we actually conduct our business. Human resource risk would cover not only that dimension of emotion that I mentioned earlier, but also, you know, the fact of the need to manage employees, to manage ourselves as managers, and even may extend to things like transferring the ranch to the next generation. So pretty broad set of human dynamics in most ag operations, and the human aspect is a very important aspect. And then the fifth category, financial risk, tends to arise where we borrow outside capital to make our business go, which a lot of folks in agriculture have need to do. So five broad categories of risk, but is intended is in this list is to cover all of those different sources of risk that may be of some concern to us. Of course, not all of them equal in terms of the risk that they represent to the business, nor do we necessarily view all of those risks as equally threatening to the business as we manage, whether it be under drought or other kinds of conditions. So if we think about a risk management process, four basic steps that we might want to accomplish if we were looking at managing risk in a broad context, the first of which is to document what conditions there may be out there, then evaluate what alternatives we may have open to us to manage in the face of those threatening conditions, and then once we've selected an alternative to actually implement the plan for managing that risk, and then of course we have to monitor and adjust as we go along. Ultimately though, the goal is to manage that risk to a level that's more comfortable for us, and to try to keep the business going. Now the first step here is to take a scoping look at what's going on in the environment. And what we're thinking about here is to kind of take stock of what's going on. Dallas talked quite a bit about some of the weather conditions in his presentation. There are a lot of sources of information currently available to help monitor what's on the forefront of weather technologies and are easily accessible to most folks with an internet connection. Just want to quickly run through some of that information. One of those that you probably have heard of before is a drought monitor, which provides a look at what current conditions may be shaping up as the year unfolds. But it also provides somewhat of a perspective on how things are expected to evolve in terms of the letters that are on the map, and whether it's anticipated that it's a long-term type of condition, short-term, or in some cases both are indicated with both an S and an L, as well as the severity of the drought conditions that are being faced in that area. Another set of maps that's available online is posted by the Farm Service Agency, is a secretarial drought designation, which is a designation by the Secretary of Agriculture, whereby counties are marked in red where they've been declared a disaster through drought conditions, or contiguous counties marked in orange are also at risk, and all of those counties that are shaded have an opportunity to actually take advantage of some programs that I'll mention here in a little bit to help mediate or moderate some of those drought financial consequences for those counties. So the map that's on the screen is the very most recent map I pulled off just yesterday, and so already this year for some parts of the country are not looking all that great in terms of drought conditions. Another index that's been discussed a lot over recent years is called the Palmer Drought Index, which is supposed to be a longer-term indicator of drought conditions. Shading indicates, based upon meteorological models, as to what's expected as far as drought as it unfolds going forward into future years, with those that are counties that are shaded that are expecting more moisture or less moisture as time unfolds. Another one that's fairly new on the scene is called the Vegetation Drought Response Index. Just recently published information, although the satellite data for this has been available for a good number of years. These maps are available to pull down that indicate conditions for rangeland forage versus another map is available on the same system for cropland moisture. You can see that the green shading for a good chunk of Wyoming tends to indicate that what we're looking at as far as current growing conditions for range forage actually looks very favorable for this part of the West, although we don't know how that may unfold going forward. If you're interested in taking a look at some of these maps, we've created a page that includes a number of risk controls available, and including some of the URLs that link to these maps for drought risk, and as well as information tied to all of the different five categories of risk. And you may find these links of some help as you look at some alternatives and consider what the current conditions are for drought and drought risk going forward. Once we have scoped the current conditions out there, we need to start taking a look at what maybe we could consider for alternatives for managing, and maybe build some of those possibilities into our drought plan, as Dallas outlined in his presentation. But just simply getting a handle on what some of the alternatives are out there is a little bit of a challenge these days, as there are a number of them have become available recently. Some of those options available to us, as far as insurance or programs to help protect and moderate against some of those drought conditions, include self-insuring. It's always an option where we basically just are willing to shoulder the losses that go along with any kind of risk that maybe comes through drought and drought conditions. But there are several other categories here I want to touch on as far as options for managing those financial exigencies coming through drought. One would be the NAP program, Non-Insured Crop Disaster Assistance Program, disaster programs that are actually funded through the Farm Bill, and then crop insurance. So the NAP coverage has historically been a catastrophic loss coverage, which required that you lose at least 50% of productivity before it would actually apply. If you had losses that were greater than that 50% level, it would make you whole back to that 50% trigger level under NAP coverage. The Farm Bill, the recently passed 2014 Farm Bill, has adjusted that for other crops outside of grazing land, where the program will provide buy-up protection up to 65%. So that will give us some additional flexibility in terms of managing forage production other than grazing land that we may want to consider. The one thing to keep in mind is that if you're going to use NAP for coverage for either grazing land or for hayland or other kinds of forage production, it needs to be put in place before December 1st in the year prior to when you want to have coverage in place. Another program, or actually it's a whole set of programs, was funded by the last Farm Bill and has now been renewed under the current 2014 Farm Bill. There's a set of programs generically called disaster assistance programs. Those of them that apply directly to livestock type operations include the Livestock Forage Disaster Program for extraordinary losses in terms of forage production, Livestock Indemnity Program, or LIP, and then there's an Emergency Livestock Assistance Program that bridges and covers some losses that may not be covered by the previous two programs that are on the list there. So the 2014 Farm Bill permanently refunded these three programs in perpetuity going forward, and folks that may have experienced losses back to October 1st, 2011 can now begin signing up for coverage under any one of those three or all of those three programs starting April 15th. So if you haven't yet contacted your FSA office and have experienced some losses, that's something that you may want to take a look at doing. In the past, a couple of these programs have required that a person be enrolled in either NAP or pasture rangeland forage programs. That caveat has been removed under the 2014 Farm Bill and is no longer required for eligibility into these programs. So federal disaster assistance programs is another whole category of assistance that may be available when drought has struck in various areas of the country. So the final thing I want to spend probably most of my time on in this presentation today is federal crop insurance. We've had, in the past, have had forage seeding and forage production insurance available for quite a long time. Those programs primarily cover stands of forage that include alfalfa in the planting in one way or another and may represent a source of management to tailor risk levels, but more recently, pasture rangeland forage vegetation index insurance has come on the scene and is a source of risk management tools to help manage in the face of drought should a person be interested in signing up. So what I'd like to do is kind of briefly walk through some of the caveats of this program and then give an example of how that may work. So it's important to keep in mind that there are two different versions of this program available. There's the vegetation index, which I've already mentioned. You can see in the map that counties that are shaded green here are those that are actually eligible for vegetation index insurance. The blue shaded counties are the alternative program, which is called the rainfall index, which we won't be discussing. It's not possible to choose between the two programs, but it's important to recognize which one applies. In Wyoming, it's a vegetation index. Because when you go to use the online tools to take a look at this program, there are some tabs that actually correspond to the two different programs. Important to get on to the right information for your operation. So vegetation index, the way it works is based upon a grid on the landscape. Those grids are laid out based on longitude and latitude coordinates. The grid size is approximately 4.8 by 4.8 square miles for the vegetation index, and data is collected for each grid separately so that the expected grid index for each and every grid out there is 100. We'll see how that applies here in a minute. The product is also tailorable in terms of time. When do you want to have coverage in place to cover forage production? And that time interval is called an index interval, and it applies to 3-month groupings of time. So the example on the screen would be might be that we actually purchase the insurance to cover April, May, and June production. There are additional choices we'll see here in a second, but you as the purchaser actually get to decide when you want to have this coverage in place for it to cover your forage production. Well, obviously properties don't necessarily correspond to grids, so your property may be of some irregular shape. We have a kind of an odd shape drawn on the screen here out there on the landscape. How would the grids apply? Well, they're overlaid across that property lines, and you get to choose as to which grid you would select to represent your property and the number of acres that you might want to enroll within any particular grid. Then the year unfolds going forward once the insurance might have been put in place, and then we, at the end of that insuring period, would be calculated a actual grid index versus the expected grid index, which we mentioned a minute ago would be 100 for any one of those grids out there on the landscape. So the idea would be that when the expected grid index is 100, the actual grid index may fall somewhere below that. In this case, demonstrated on the screen, the actual grid index turned out to be 44. If we had purchased the coverage at some 75% level, where 44 falls below the 75% level, it would trigger a payment to us, and we could be made whole back to that trigger level of 75%. It's important to keep in mind, though, that this product is what we call a group insurance product. So it's not insuring production that actually occurs on your place, but rather that it insures production that occurs within any particular grid. So an actual operation may experience a loss where the grid maybe makes the average, or actual performance doesn't actually fall below that trigger level for the grid as a whole. So as a result, that individual producer may not receive an indemnity payment. The reverse is also true, though, where the grid may fall below that trigger level that the producer had insured at, and an indemnity would be triggered, and the actual losses on a particular producer within that grid may not have been that severe. So it could work one way or another, depending on how weather conditions and geography unfold. But it's important to recognize that it's not going to cover actual production on your place, but rather is covering a grid as a whole and the producers that are operating within it as a group. What dates would you be purchasing it for? The product, when you buy the coverage, is available for a calendar year, January 1 to December 31st, but a person needs to purchase the insurance by November 15th. That's the sales closing date for this product, and the idea is that if you knew you needed insurance, well, you might actually go out and buy it. And so we want people to buy the insurance in anticipation of a coming production year. So the idea is you would buy it by November 15th for the subsequent calendar year of production. What is the forage being valued at under the product? Those values are determined by RMA, and you can see the 2014 crop year values for grazing forage indicated on the screen. For hayland, the values are a bit higher. Those are a constant assessed value across all of the counties in Wyoming, at the $300+ for the current 2014 crop year. All right, so how do we actually determine whether or not this product is a good idea for us, and whether it actually applies in a way that we think fits us? Well, there are a number of tools online that can help you evaluate that for yourself. Not only looking up specific grids, but also looking at the grid expectation given the data set with the past performance. So what I want to do is kind of quickly walk through how you would look that up. The first thing you need to do is identify the grid. And so the grid locator tool looks somewhat like what you see on the screen there, is a map of the United States. And it provides a place to select either vegetation or rainfall index on the tabs at the top. Vegetation index, again, is the product that applies to Wyoming. Then what we can do is type in a landmark. It says find location there at the window. You can type in a landmark, or you can start zooming in with the zoom tool there at the upper left-hand corner of that window to drill down to a particular location that you may find applies for a grid, one grid or another, to tie to your place. When you get drilled down, you can start to see the grids and the grid ID numbers on the landscape. And you can drop a pin as to where you want to apply the coverage. I'm selecting a grid here that's numbered 70779, which is a grid located in Fremont County. You can see the arrow there in the upper left-hand corner. I'm moving. It's where Riverton is located in the county, to give you a feel for just where that exists. So what I'm going to do is follow through an example for this particular grid, but the experience is very similar for many other grids in the state that I've had a chance to look at. The point is these tools are available to everyone, and at no charge. You can actually log into the RMA website and take a look at any grid that you might have a question about. So again, once you have the grid ID located and noted within the system, you then move to what's called the decision support tool by clicking on a button on that previous screen, and we now start spelling out some of the details about the coverage that we'd like to put in place. The first detail, of course, is what type of intended use do we have in mind, and we can choose grazing land or hay land with this choice. As to the type of intended use, I've chosen grazing land. We can choose the coverage level. Here we can tailor that coverage anywhere from 90% down to 70% and 5% increments. And again, this serves as the trigger level. That is the point at which the index needs to fall below before the insurance policy would actually trigger. And so in this case, I'm choosing 90% as my coverage level. A productivity factor is a way of adjusting our productivity for this particular grid and for the particular property within that grid that we're thinking about covering. If we think it tends to be more productive, we could assign a higher level, a number larger than 100. It would indicate that it's a higher productivity than the rest of the grid. We could also use a lower number, downwards to 60%, if we think that property may be of a lower productivity than the balance of the grid. And so we can adjust anywhere between 60 and 150% productivity. I would just point out that even though it's possible to adjust upward, keep in mind that the principle with any kind of insurance is that the more coverage you select, the higher the premium that would be that you'd have to pay to go along with that coverage. We can also adjust for our insurable interest. So if we're in a share situation, either because we're in a lease, or if we're in a crop share of some sort, a number of kinds of arrangements out there, but you can put in something other than 100% to reflect your percentage interest in the arrangement. I'm going to use 100 in my example. We also get to choose the number of acres we want to insure under this policy. We do not have to insure all of our acres, but it is up to us to select how many acres up to the total that we may have within that grid that we could insure. I'm selecting 640 acres for this example on a section of ground out there in Fremont County. And then we also select a sample year for comparison. We'll look at how that applies here in a second. Once we've made those choices, probably the most important decision regarding this policy after those would be when we want to have that policy apply. So as I described earlier, the index interval represents the time during the year when we want the coverage to be in effect. And that is grouped up in 3-month periods. So as you can see, in the first choice, available to us for this particular grid is April, May, and June. We can put on 100% of our coverage in that particular interval, or we could spread out coverage between those months to a period of time later in the year. You can see that some of the choices are grayed out. It says NA there. And the reason is just because we cannot have overlapping coverage. If we chose one of those options, it would be overlapping with our first choice there. So it's possible to tailor this coverage as to when during the year you might want to have it apply. The sum of our choices, however, need to add up to 100%. So in my example, I'm putting on 100% of the coverage in the spring months of the year, primarily because I'm looking at trying to protect forage production on grazing land, and that forage tends to be produced using cool season grasses early in the year. And if that production isn't out there for me, I am not able to graze it later in the year, so there are some different strategies others may want to use at other locations in the state as to tailor that level of coverage that best fits their situation. Okay, so once we have those values selected, we can now calculate, and the system gives us an estimate of what the cost would be in terms of premium. So the value in this particular county is set for grazing land at $8.72, and the corresponding premium then for this policy on the 640 acres would be $356 in total before subsidy. The subsidy on this product is at 51%, so the out-of-pocket premium that the producer would pay would be somewhere around $343 to cover that 640 acres for the interval of April, May, and June. And with most insurance products, that's where the lesson ends. It basically tells you how much it's going to cost. With this product, you actually have the opportunity to see how it would perform based on past information, on weather data and satellite information collected. To do that, you click on the button at the top. There is labeled Graph View, and it will then show this series of lines representing all of the different time periods in a calendar year where you where coverage might have been available. And they don't make a lot of sense until you realize that there is a black line going across at 100. Remember, what we said was that the expected grid index for any particular grid out there is 100. And so when the lines fall below 100, we start moving into some areas where drought has been experienced, and it might trigger a payment depending on whether the index interval falls below that trigger level that we selected when we put the coverage on. Okay, so that's kind of interesting, but it's still not clear as to whether or not we would receive what payments and when. It's possible to make a choice over here to the left, estimated indemnities, which if we select then gives us our graph reformulated based upon only the April, May, June interval that we purchased the coverage for, and then showing only the years when we would have received a payment, and then the magnitude of that payment over indicated by the scale on the left-hand side. So we can see which years that grid experienced poor growing conditions based on satellite imagery, and it also shows the level of payments if we had put that insurance on at that time. And that's all very interesting, but it doesn't really give us a very good feel about where we would be left off if we had purchased that on a regular basis. So there is another choice here. It's called Chart View at the top I like to use. If we select that, it actually gives us that data that was on the graph in a tabular format, which if we're handy with our mouth, we can copy and paste into a spreadsheet. And when we do that, it might look something like this when we drop it in. We could put those payments there in the April, May, June interval down the sort of somewhat of the center of the slide with the premiums entered over here at the $343. If we take the total of those two numbers and add them together, we find that we would have a net benefit to our situation of just over $11,000 over that 25-year history of weather data being available under this product. Now, of course, that's assuming that the premium would have remained the same. We don't know what it would have been because the product has only been available in Wyoming since 2007, so you know, there are some variability in here that we can't really know for sure exactly how we would turn out going forward, but it does give you a feel for how the product has performed in this particular grid. And again, you can call this up for your grid or any other grid that you might have an interest in exploring to see where you might be left, given some of that meteorological data. If you're interested in taking a look at how this might apply for a haying situation, because drought has the potential of affecting hay yields as well, I've run another example using the same grid, changing the intended use to haying and changing the number of acres to 200. So again, this is on 200 acres of forage in the same grid that we were using earlier. We'll find that the county base value has increased to the $301 we looked at on that map a little bit earlier. And as a result, the premium for the policy at the subsidized level turns to about $3,700 we would need to pay to cover that 200 acres of hay ground. If we run through the example with the graph again, we find that the graph itself looks very similar. In fact, it's exactly the same pattern of a line, but the scale at the left has changed substantially in terms of the magnitude of payments that we would have received if we had had this policy in place in those past years. If we take that tabular data and aggregate it in a spreadsheet using the $3,700 premium over here and totaling the indemnity payments over the 25-year history, we find that we would have been almost $123,000 to the good having purchased this PRF coverage on our hay ground in that grid in Fremont County. So again, this is available to everyone to look up. Sometimes get people somewhat unclear about the availability of these tools. They are open to access to everyone. If you want to take a look at them, look at tailoring coverage either in terms of the number of acres you enroll, when during the year you might have the enrollment period. It gives you great flexibility in evaluating how the policy might work given your location in the state of Wyoming. You might also want to consider some other insurance products. Drought conditions have an influence on lots of things outside of forage production. Those conditions can influence calf prices, quite obviously, coal cow prices. It could influence, obviously, hay prices, as well as a number of other things. So for that reason, you may want to consider some of the other insurance products available. I've listed a few others that would apply directly to livestock producers in the form of livestock risk protection, or LRP, listed there at the top. It's available for feeder or fed cattle in the state of Wyoming, as well as swine. AGR Lite is an adjusted gross revenue product that's available for whole farm revenue insurance. LGM coverage is available as a margin insurance for cattle that are on feed, also includes swine. And then finally, we also have LRP, or livestock risk protection, available on lamb produced in the state of Wyoming. So livestock risk protection is a price insurance product that provides a mechanism for purchasing price coverage for either feeder cattle, calves that you may have out on range, for fed cattle, that is heavier cattle that might be on a feedlot situation, or for lambs. To give you a feel for how that might look at the present time, I pulled this report off of the RMA website just yesterday. There are a lot of numbers. Sometimes you take a look at these reports, it's a very long report. But at the present time, for a 26-week policy, at the very bottom of the report, which implies an end date, that is when we would plan to market our calves, of somewhere in early November, the price that's currently being forecast as the expected ending value is $209.73 a hundred. So with that price out there at the far end of the spectrum, and a coverage level that's currently available in that policy of 26 weeks is estimated at 96.5%. The implication is that you could put a floor price in on your calves at the current time for $202, and to do that would cost you about $4.03 a hundredweight. To put that policy in place would be a little bit less than that, because the $4.03 is actually an unsubsidized rate. This policy is subsidized at about a 13% rate. So again, for under 6-weight calves, this would be a price that you could put on at the present time. You don't have to insure all your calves. You could insure just a portion of them. But the idea is that this $202 would represent a floor. And if the actual index fell below that by the end of the insurance period, you could receive an indemnity on those calves that you insured to make you whole back to that trigger level. It's also important to recognize that this does not lock you into anything as to how you sell your calves on the cash market. So it would be possible to forward contract calves. It's possible to take them directly to an auction yard or sell them to another buyer. However you want to dispose of the calves in terms of the cash market, all those options are still available to you. One caveat under this policy is that you need to retain ownership to within 30 days of that end date, or in this case, it would be early November. So that represents a real opportunity to manage price risk for calves that are out there starting to go onto range at the present time. We've talked a lot about evaluating alternatives and looking at some of the options that are open to us. I would argue that it's not enough to just look at those options and know that they exist, but we probably need to spend some time in analysis of those options and comparing what those options may do as far as if bad things happen, where they may leave us, what effect they may have as far as protecting our net income, either in how they may protect our forage production capability, our price in terms of selling calves, etc., and evaluate each of those options as to whether they think one versus another may be the best alternative. We have a number of tools that the folks involved in doing right risk education, a team of us, have developed over the last many years. Three broad categories depending on how big a change that you may be considering. So again, reading here, if you're looking at relatively small changes, the risk scenario planner may be the better alternative to use. Enterprise budget or enterprise risk analyzer, we call this tool, lets you look at all larger changes, whereas a whole farm budget may be the way to look at some of the bigger changes that you may be considering. An example we have here of the risk scenario planner looks at using LRP to protect prices on a group of calves. In this case, it was 500 calves. And what this tool lets you do is evaluate all the positive effects, which would be any added returns or possibly reduced costs due to the strategy you may be looking at, or the negative effects, which may represent added costs or possibly reduced returns, depending on what your strategy may look like and how you're looking at implementing it. In this case, down here at the lower right-hand part of the screen, you can see that we would, for all of the factors considered, we would have been a little over $73,600 to the good to have implemented this LRP strategy. And that's powerful information, certainly, but we've taken this one level further in terms of the budgeting capacity of this tool and allowed you to enter two different factors that may vary. So in this example, we're looking at the variation in the LRP price index, allowing it to vary anywhere from 140 to 170 based on historic information. And what that shows us is that we actually have put in a floor using LRP to ensure that we get something close to 73,000, 400, something like that there on the graph. And what's more interesting than maybe that absolute floor level is the fact that it indicates the probability of that occurring. And so what we can see by reading across to the left here is that that floor actually kicked in something like 56 or 57% of the time. It actually provided a floor price to us versus this other run of the line out to the right, which happened the rebalance of the 60+% of the time. So the point is that LRP is protecting our income in this example, a fair amount of the time as we project going forward. There's a lot of what-if analysis can be accomplished using this tool. I'd invite you to take a look at it. It's available on the site for free and download to use at your discretion. The Enterprise Risk Analyzer tool provides some options to evaluate alternatives between enterprises. So we can define enterprises, typical ranches, got laid out here, cow-calf versus native hay, alfalfa we may have in some meadows, etc. You can define exactly your enterprise information for your operation and then calculate a net income and a break-even set of prices as well as break-even yields that go along with that net income level. And so it's a very powerful tool just in terms of that initial table, but we've also allowed for variability in the tool. So if we look at the variation in yields and the variation in prices that we entered for each of those enterprises, we then are generating a net income return curve that gives us not only the range of net incomes that we might expect to receive, giving variations in all of those commodities, but also the probability. And so with this curve, the most likely outcomes occur at the top of that curve, with a probability estimate that's available when you mouse over those various points on the line. In addition to net income analysis, we also have break-even analysis, which shows us break-even prices or break-even yields. And in addition to that, given the variation that we've entered, we can also estimate the probability of breaking even at any particular point along the line. We also have that analysis for both net income and break-even analysis done on all cash and non-cash expenses, are called gross expenses here, or only looking at cash expenses in the equation and what break-even price we might need to only cover cash costs and associated probabilities along the line there as well. So again, a very powerful set of tools in the Enterprising Risk Analyzer evaluation of various enterprises that you may be engaged in. It's set up to enter your own information to help you evaluate various alternatives for risk management. The final tool we have is this whole farm budget evaluation tool, which lets you look at the entire operation and evaluate the whole farm net income and or profitability situation. It lets you make adjustments once you've entered your own information into this tool and see what the incomes and outflows may be as far as the net income. It helps you to do financial analysis for your whole farm, or if you want to make large changes in the operation, whether it be leasing in some additional forage, purchasing a neighboring ranch, or doing what-if analysis for sale of a herd of cows, or downsizing in terms of land base. It would give you the ability to analyze all of those different alternatives. Again, once you've entered your own information, which is possible with this tool to save and do what-if analysis going forward. So some very powerful tools to help you evaluate some of these risk management strategies and where you think they may leave you as an operation with the implementation of one strategy or a combination of strategies. I guess I'd just remind you as we close from that section that while these tools can help you compare those alternatives, it's up to you as an operator is to decide whether or not you think they put you in a better position, either in terms of net income, which is one way of measuring whether or not you're improving, but also in terms of risk and whether or not that risk profile is actually improving given your own risk tolerance and comfort level in carrying risk in your operation. And you, the operator, and or the management team are the ones that need to make that decision as to whether or not you're moving in the right direction or whether or not you need to consider some other alternatives to help protect against those different kinds of risk you're most concerned about managing. So the final two steps of this risk management process I talked about earlier would be to make a choice, actually select one or more risk management alternatives, and then implement those plans. And of course, as you begin to do that implementation, the weather unfolds, cattle prices, other kinds of factors of risk unfold as the year goes along, and so you need to monitor and adjust your management as you move through the upcoming year. We've developed a set of tools as part of some past efforts on the Right Risk team to develop a process to help you think through that, managing risk in a strategic framework. There is a text that's available if a person might be interested in that. But more importantly, there's over 25 different tools that we've been able to make available at the Right Risk site for you to download. It gives you some planning worksheets, some forms to do some of this kind of risk planning, some other details about evaluating alternatives that I did not mention. It's a really rich source of alternatives for looking at risk in a strategic framework and thinking about how it may apply to your operation as well as to evaluate those choices that may be open to you for managing those risks going forward. So I think with that, I've kind of covered quickly, and I apologize for the rapid movement through all this material. Is quite a lot of different choices and alternatives available. Hopefully I've given you some insights as to some of the alternative management strategies that may be open to you and or you may want to consider going forward. And I want to thank Chris and Lucy and all those who are responsible for making this webinar possible, for the opportunity to offer these different tools to help folks manage risk as drought and price volatility unfold going forward, even in the current year. So again, I've hoped I've answered a few questions, but if there are any others that might have come in from the audience, I'd be happy to try to answer those at this point.
Thanks, John. I do have one as we prepare for the next presentation. On that pasture land index, the veg index, grid index, is that available on federal lands or state?
So the short answer is yes, it is possible to purchase pasture rangeland forage insurance on any kind of a lease or other kind of situation where you may have an interest. So it could include leased ground, obviously, but it may include if you had some kind of a partial or share ownership in some other kind of an arrangement with someone, another operator or a group of operators, you can purchase coverage to protect against the loss in forage productivity in those situations as well.
All right, thank you.